going, guys? I'm Jeff.
I'm Alyssa.
And welcome to Anything and Everything, an up-close and personal look into the lives of two married people who talk about faith, culture, and answer your questions. First of all, guys, thank you for listening in. This is probably the biggest hiatus we've taken from the podcast in a long time. It's been a few months. I know you guys have been tweeting about it, Facebooking us about it, wanting it to come back. And good news, it is back. If you are listening, that means we are back on the map. We're recording these again. And we had a really good reason to start recording again. And that is because we have a really awesome special guest with us. We have with us someone who, an author, and someone who Alyssa has been listening to and reading for a while. And actually, her book, what was it, Mission of Motherhood, was really impactful to Alyssa just a couple months ago. And we want to talk to her about another book she has coming out, which we'll get into in a second. But Sally, thanks for coming on.
I'm so happy to be here. We are big fans of your family. So it was fun to know we're mutual fans.
I know. No, that was, it was awesome. It's funny how much the internet makes a small world, you know?
Yeah, so true.
What, we forgot to ask before we hit record, where even are you calling from? Was it Colorado you said, or did I hear that?
Yeah, I'm calling from Monument, Colorado. It's between Colorado Springs and Denver, way up high in the mountains.
Ooh, that's nice. We were a little familiar with that type of vibe since we both grew up in Pacific Northwest. So
yeah.
Well, Alyssa actually was born in Colorado, weren't you?
I was, yeah, but I don't remember it.
Yeah, because you like moved when you were two. Oh. But yeah. But no, hey, thanks again for joining us. And so for those listening, the thing we really want to make kind of the topic, the thesis, the kind of the overarching umbrella of this podcast is Sally's new book that comes out in about a week, but you can also get it already right now. They usually start sending out books a little bit early, and it's called The Life-Giving Home, Creating a Place of Belonging and Becoming. And Alyssa is basically like on the last couple pages by the bookmark I'm looking at right now, and she is loving it. So,
oh, good.
Yeah, she's loving it. It's been fun. Almost every night when we put Kinsley to bed, she's been reading it lately, and I can't wait to start flipping through it when she is done. But, you know, I feel like I've already gotten the cliff notes because every time she reads, she downloads to me.
It's all I've been talking about last week.
Exactly. But yeah, you were going to ask kind of the first question to get us started. Do you want to maybe start off?
Well, I thought, Sally, just for the audience that isn't familiar with your work or what you do, if you could just tell us a little bit about your family and all the places you guys have lived. That'd be awesome.
Okay, great. Well, I was a missionary a long time ago in Eastern Europe when it was still communist. I had gotten to work with a lot of college students and diplomats and musicians and different people. I lived in Poland, and I had been on the staff of Campus Crusade for Christ, so I kind of cut my teeth on discipleship and all these different ministries that we were doing with people all over the world. And then my husband and I got married when I was a little bit older, when I was about 29, and we moved back to Vienna, Austria. And it was there that we had these small groups and Bible studies and lots of people. And we both began talking idealistically about if we ever had a family, we should disciple them and train them and build them into leaders like all the leaders we were having fun meeting in Austria at the time. We were working with people from the United Nations and different places. And so fast forward, we moved back to America to work on some projects and things. And we saw the family, the state of the family in the United States. And we thought, oh my goodness, somebody needs to champion the cause of family and help parents know what it looks like to disciple their children and to give them character and give them vision for life and so on. So very idealistically, we started our ministry many years ago. And fast forward, eventually we had four kids who were our guinea pigs for all of our philosophy. And we kept wanting to have more kids so we could eventually do it right someday. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, we really realized over the years that I remember holding my daughter in my hands when I was 31, and all of a sudden, it was the first baby I'd ever had, and I wasn't really, I had never changed a diaper. I wasn't one of those girls who knew what to do, and as I was holding her, it was as though God whispered in my ear, "This child has eternal implications. Will you whisper the secrets of God into her little mind, her heart, her soul?" And I realized that God had trusted me with some little personality that I would have the opportunity to shape and inspire and encourage. So this concept of our book actually started out when I had my first child because I had never been taught how important home could be as the place where souls would be shaped and minds would be inspired and hearts would be changed. And so Clay and I started our ministry and have been doing conferences for about 20 years. We have four kids. I have Sarah, who is a writer. She's written four books. She's studying theology in Oxford right now. And then my son Joel is 29. He's a composer and works with film scoring and does orchestration for all sorts of people and has produced his own albums. And then I have Nathan, who is 26, and he is also in the arts. We need somebody practical in our lives, but he just produced his first film called Confessions of a Prodigal Son. And then I had three children, three miscarriages. And when I was 42, I had another little girl, Joy. And Joy is 20, and she graduated last spring from Biola University and is probably also going to be going to either St. Andrews or Oxford next year to do her master's degree. So it's been fun.
Oh my goodness. I feel like
these kids grow
and
get into life and have all sorts of ideals and to be inspired in their own lives after all these years.
That is incredible. Well, it sounds like, yeah, I don't even know. That's I don't even want to know what they all got in their SATs then, it sounds like. But it, it is a small world though too. Like one of my really good friends and my the friend who does all my video production, he actually is a student at Biola right now. So I wonder if they even probably know each other. But he's a senior right now, and so he's graduating I think this year. But yeah, Biola is great and it's amazing. But man, I love what you said about family, and I feel like that's what really we were so excited to do this podcast about, because we're in that season right now. I'm 26. Alyssa's 28. We have an almost 2-year-old. She's 6 months along with our baby boy. And so, and I would almost say that we are almost the prototype of what our rest of our audience is, where I bet the rest of our audience is just like that. Mid-20s. They got some young kids on the way. We probably have some teenagers and some college students that listen as well. But obviously that means this will be in their future in 5 to 10 years, maybe.
Sure.
And so, I'd love to start just speaking to that. And I love what you said too. Like, I mean, and you probably got more of like a an obvious way to see that America was really lacking in family, because you came from like another context. So you kind of didn't really, you know, you weren't swimming in that pool where you couldn't see. You kind of already, you know, you came from an outsider perspective a little bit. And I just think, that really is the problem that me and Alyssa always talk about, that how when you look at the Jewish faith, when you look at kind of the ancient ways of scripture and in Jesus's world, spiritual formation was almost primarily done in the home, at the table, under the roof of a family. And we've kind of turned church programming into like the primary way of doing that now, rather than the family. And of course, the church is God's vehicle for redemption of the world. But we've just noticed that we just outsource a lot of the family's discipleship work that God's given us. And so what would you say in regards to maybe the main, like when you came to America and you kind of saw, I came back to America, I mean, and kind of saw that lack of family. What was like the main thing when you guys started your ministry that you said, we really want to concentrate on this?
Well, because we had been in discipleship ministries, and especially when I worked in communist countries, we knew that if we didn't teach real foundational principles, the faith wouldn't continue if we were kicked out of the country. So we tried to really focus on the ideals of scripture. And when we came back to America, we were pretty much shocked. We'd been gone for 6 years, and a lot had happened in that time. And we thought, oh my goodness, no one is speaking about the importance of children. I think that culture lost its imagination for parenting or motherhood or fatherhood in the midst of going toward a technological world. And, you know, we measure what we do in life by accomplishments. But we were working with lots of different people in churches that we felt like had scars or difficulties just because of the way they were raised. And I just started studying. No one ever told me anything. Clay and I were extreme idealists, but I looked in Genesis 1 and it said, the first blessing out of God's mouth was to be fruitful and multiply, to have children. And we saw the family as the means in Genesis 1, as the people who were first given the mandate to bring God's righteousness to bear in their world, to take his messages and to take his beauty, his goodness, all the good in creation was supposed to be celebrated in family so that the children would learn to love God. And I saw children are a blessing, the fruit of the womb is a reward. And I was like a little child eating up things I'd never learned before. And I began to think about the fact that my children were created in the image of God, that they had vast potential emotionally, mentally, spiritually. Mm-hmm. And so we began thinking through how can we be stewards in our home to inspire them with great stories, to celebrate great feasts and have discussions, to teach them how to love generously, to have ministry in our home where they could learn how to love people and to love the word. And so really just by God's probably design or call in our lives, with everybody else not understanding our focus on all these messages, we yeah. had the best time over those years studying scripture, raising our children, reaching out to families. And we fell in love in our home with our family and children and all the things we saw happening that we had never been taught.
No, yeah, we love that. And that's exactly, I think, something that we so need, like our generation, and something that we're so lacking. And so I appreciate people who have gone before us, like you guys, in setting that foundation. But yeah, what do you think, Liz?
And Sally, even as you're talking, I like have tears in my eyes because it's just so beautiful. And I love your heart for the Lord and for your family. And I think I just can't get enough of your books because it's really been impactful in my life. So it's such an honor to talk to
you. It's life-giving, hence the title.
But I do want to get into your book before time runs out. It's so good. I'm going to just, I have a few questions that I just was wanting you to mention as I was reading through it. I love the part in it. I don't even know what part of the book, but how you talked about how each of your kids have a different personality, mm-hmm. and two of them are more introverted and two of them are more extroverted, and just how it took you a little bit to learn about them and then learn how to connect with them. Do you want to share more about that with our audience?
Well, I think that Clay and I we realized very early that our children responded differently to our love, our encouragement, our relationship with them. And I think that our culture is so used to conforming to each other, and everybody's so dependent upon the voices of culture as to how to raise children. And early in our lives, we thought, you know, we're just going to walk by faith and say, God, show me what this child is good at. So if one of the children loved music, like Joel, who became a composer, we would just affirm him and say, I wonder how God's going to use your music to inspire people. And I have Sarah, who's studying at Oxford. I never knew she'd study in Oxford. And really, their SATs weren't it so much as motivating their hearts. They were all deeply yeah. motivated to work hard. And I think that's why they are where they are, more than their SATs. But I could see when she was a little girl that she devoured books. She loved words. She spent hours and hours writing in her journal. And so I would look for ways to really help her grow in terms of reading lots of stories and books. And then my last two were both extremely extroverted and out of the box children, and they acted and they sang and they engaged in life and they loved discussing. And so our kids are all very similar in the sense that we have similar values and we love the same stories and the same, brand of tea or favorite food. But each of them is very different personality-wise, and we tried to cultivate an environment in which we could help each of them flourish within the context of their own strengths, weaknesses, personalities, and desires, because we felt like God had something unique for each of them to do in the world, and so we would speak forward into their lives. Nathan, you're such a great storyteller, and now he's writing movies, and I think it's just a matter of not depending upon all of the voices of culture, but saying, my goodness, I have this amazing person here. I wonder what their capacity is and what their interests will be. So we really tried to focus on the person that God created them to be and gave them great freedom to be themselves.
That's awesome.
I love that. Another topic you talked a lot about, hospitality throughout the whole book, which is, I mean, we think about that when we talk about the home. But you had so many visitors and people coming in and out of your home. Do you want to talk more about that and just how to cultivate a hospitable home, I guess?
Well, yeah. And I think a lot of times people, And this is, it seems like we're moving more and more towards like people don't let other people come into your home. It seems a little bit like that's almost like.
Like I'll meet you at coffee or out to dinner.
Yeah, which of course that has its place. But it seems like, how did you guys really create the home as a sacred place for hospitality, for guests, for people? And especially maybe early on in the marriage when you feel like maybe you're not, you know, when you're in your mid-20s or you're in your early 30s and you don't feel like you maybe have, you know, this or this to be able to do that. How did you guys do that early on?
You know, it probably helped us that we spent our first years in marriage in a very tiny apartment in Austria because there's the people that we lived around just loved coming to our house. We had this little old house that had drippy walls, and we had a little pigeon in our attic that we named Walter because he kept flying into the roof.
Walter, that's awesome.
Anyway, it was a time in which in Austria, there were so many, there were 100,000 non-Austrian people in the United Nations. So we would just invite people over. I'd make a big pot of soup and people would sit on the floor or they would pile into our living room. And we had such a grand time. And that was kind of the way that we learned hospitality, because so many people in our lives in Vienna invited each other over during holidays because none of us had any family. And we would have Bible studies in our homes because there weren't the same church structures as we had here. And you could always talk to somebody for a couple of hours in a cafe if you just got one cup of coffee. So we really practiced early in our marriage loading people in our home. And that's one thing that I really hope people will get from this book, is that home is mainly about a person who intentionally creates a space and a heart attitude that says, I want to love real people. I want to listen to the hearts of real people. I want my children and the friends who come in my home to feel the touch of God through my hands, the encouragement and the hope of God through the way we celebrate life. And so it was a practice that we learned overseas, but that we extended into our lives here. And I will have to say that every small group that we've ever had in our home, we've had to start. We moved 17 times, 6 times internationally. And we do have a lot more people in our home than people have us over. But I really believe that in this time of life or of history, people need not just cyber relationships, but they need somebody to sit and listen to them and to understand their heart needs and to pray for them and to feed them a great feast and to say, you know what? I am so thankful that you're in my life. Let's be friends. Let's share life. Let's enjoy memories together. And I think that community building within the home is something that everyone longs for. Everybody longs for a place to be and a place to belong and a place where they'll be accepted and a place where they can ask questions. And so it was kind of just something we learned in Europe in a small space, and we just continue to practice as our houses and children grew.
I love that. I love that. Do you have a question?
I was just going to say too, and I love that because even single people can do that. And as I'm thinking about it, like our two friends who are our best friends who are both single, they're two of the most hospitable people I know. And like, anyway, so it's just cool that no matter where you are in life or what season, we can still have people in our home. And
well, I have this memory of this sweet woman. I don't even know her name, but I was a single missionary in Vienna many years ago. I think I was engaged to Clay or something. And she invited me over to this apartment, and there were three or four children running around. There were Legos everywhere. And she took her arm and she just kind of scraped all the toys onto the floor. And then she put two little teacups down and she said, now we have a very special 30 minutes that we get to have together. I can't wait to get to know you. And I realized she didn't care about the kids, the food, the toys. And I felt like the most special person in the world because I'd been very lonely and she invited me into her space. And that was also a really great memory for me to realize that I felt loved not because of her perfect home, but because of her deep heart.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Because, I think sometimes we get caught up in the stuff that really doesn't matter. And then we miss out on the fact that our neighbors are the ones that are dying to come over and they need that love. They need that compassion. They need that, that grace. And like you said, those real on real relationships. Getting back to the book, I love, Alyssa was explaining to me this, explaining this to me last night, how you did like, each month you kind of make almost like a theme is almost a way to put it, to kind of separate the year and kind of say, how are we going to be intentional in January, in February, in March, in our home? Can you first explain that a little bit to the people listening? And then also secondly, I'd love to hear maybe what your favorite one is, like out of either the favorite theme or just a memory that sticks out of one of the themes.
Okay. Gosh, that's hard. A lot of great ones. Well, I think that as a mom of four young children, we were always moving. My children were asthmatic, ear infected, and they wanted to eat every day and wear relatively clean clothes. And so I realized many years ago that if I had a plan, if I had some a list of books to read or movies to watch or things to do. And so I started making a plan, just jotting down every year some things that we like to do every year. Like, it's very cold here in January, and after Christmas, everybody's adrenaline is a little bit down. And so I would come up with just some, we would do some fun meal nights and invite people over for big bowls of soup or big pots of soup and games. Even last night, my oldest two were over at some friend's house nearby. They're both just happened to be in town, and they played these great games all evening. And as adults, and it's just because they have some friends that they've done a lot of fun things with over the years. So we That's made awesome. It a point in January to try to have warm meals and to have two or three different families that we would invite over, because it's just so hard to get out in the cold and snow. So there are things like in the summer, our family always tried to locate a house when we would move near a big park, or we would try to get a house that had a big yard. And our kids loved running all over the land and playing pretend and dress up. And so we would often go to Goodwill stores, and I would look for little army jackets for the boys, or little capes for the boys to be superheroes. That. The girls could use them for skirts. And sometimes we would read a book out loud. We ate outdoors a lot. We always had a porch or a deck. We had piles of Legos that we would say build a whole city. Or
Legos are the best.
I'm sorry.
I said we love Legos.
Yeah, I don't know what we would have done without Legos, but our kids kind of, I think whatever you create as appetites for children, if you can just keep them off those machines, they will pretend, and they love pretending and making up their own games, their own stories. And oftentimes people say, how did you cultivate such creative kids who are writing, symphonies and plays and books? And really, it's because we didn't have social media at the time when I was raising my kids, but also by the time my fourth daughter came around, we didn't let her do a lot of social media unless she had to, in the sense of we would try to cultivate great fun in our home and have, really fun parties. We would do stuff with the kids when they were older. We would have these extravagant treasure hunts where they go all over town at Christmas and take pictures of like snowmen or angels or, trees. That would put all the teenagers into cars, and they would go all over town and take pictures and come back and race each other. So we tried to think of creative things that would require them to engage their hearts, their minds, their friendships. And it doesn't mean we never watched movies. We love movies. We're all technologically savvy, but we did create a home where there were a lot of things to do and natural relationships and people piled in our home, which meant our children had to learn to serve people and to, to share their food and to share their bedrooms. Yeah. And so it was a plan that worked, and it kind of created a, I don't know if I'd call it a club, but we all feel so close to each other. We love getting back together anytime that we can.
Yeah, that is awesome. I love that. And I love it's like simple, but it's like, I love how you guys took advantage of the natural rhythms of months and seasons and times and stuff like that, to then kind of make those almost like stakes in the ground for the kids on this is what this is going to be like this month. And I feel like kids, like, 18 years when they get out of the home, that's usually what they remember and stuff. So I love mm-hmm. that. But I think, Liz, did you have another question you were going to ask?
Oh, yeah. I just finished reading the chapter about August and how you guys do the story of us. Can you explain that a little bit for our audience?
Yeah, I will. And I want everyone to know that raising four kids was not natural to me, but I felt like it was a design that God wanted us to do as a service of worship to Him. In other words, if you capture a vision for what you think He thinks family is, then you do it out of a heart because you believe it's something that matters for eternity. And so that kept us going a lot, even through the messes and the piles and this, that, and the other. But we realized that when we read Joshua, Clay had taught a Bible study on the Joshua many years before, when Joshua had asked all the Israelites, when God had done a miracle and spread the waters apart during a flood season, Joshua said to all the people, you need to make memorial stones of all the great things that God has done so that you won't forget. And so when the kids were really little, we do this, we still do it. We bring the kids from all over the world at least twice a year to be together for a week. And in the summer, which is near our anniversary, we called it Family Day. So I would make a huge feast in the morning, you know, some kind of cheesy scrambled eggs and cinnamon rolls that I'd made. And we would have mugs of coffee and we would sit around the table and begin reading the story of Joshua. And then all of us for the last about literally 30 years would get a pencil and paper. And we would all begin remembering, what has God done in the past year that I can see His faithfulness? Or how has He allowed us to grow? How has He provided for our needs? And even in the hardest years when we all thought, oh, we're never going to figure out anything that God's done this year, it's been so hard. And we would all sit together, and as we began to remember, we could see the fingerprints of God in our lives and in the personal areas of our life. And, you know, when the kids were little, they might write down things like, God gave me a puppy dog this year, and I'm so glad He made puppy dogs. And that was their history, you know, of their year. It was always something that would cause them to really value something that they could see was faithful in their lives. But now, as we look back on these notebooks of all these papers that we've collected, we're kind of amazed that God has given us a sense of history. This is who the Clarksons are, and this is our story, and this is how He created history for us. And I think that as sometimes in this culture, we forget that God is a God of story and generations and relatives. And so we really passed on to our children that each of us has an opportunity to live a story worth telling and to be a hero in our own story, and how to really say, I wonder how God's going to use you in your world, in your lifetime, to extend the story that we started here as a family. And I really think that's kind of what has captured my children's vision as adults in their worlds. They do feel like they're a part of God's mega story. You know, they're Frodo, or they're Gandalf, or they have a part in a great story of bringing light and goodness and beauty to a world, and it's because we celebrated it all their lives.
I absolutely love that. That is incredible. I feel like we are gonna we've talked about doing something similar to that, but I never thought about kind of really writing it down in like notebook form, because then, I mean, like you said, what, 20, 30 years, you know, you look back on this and it's just such a legacy, you know?
It's been really fun, yeah. More than I knew.
How old were your kids when you started it?
I think that we probably started it, I'm thinking when they were little. You know, we had such a variety of ages, and I don't want anybody to picture our family as perfect, because, you know, we would establish these traditions, like we have this Sunday afternoon, we call it Sunday afternoon tea time, because that's what we did in Europe, and tea time can be coffee, hot chocolate, apple juice, whatever, but we would stop and we would do a fun game, eat something that we didn't eat the rest of the week, you know, some kind of treat. And I remember the first time we did it, you know, and I thought, this is going to be great. And my little boy, Nathan, knocked over the juice, you know, that of his brothers, and they started screaming. And then Joel got into a fight with him and said, I can't believe you knocked over my juice. So, you know, it doesn't mean that it's perfect, but you just keep the rhythms going. And little by little, I would be amazed at how much our kids loved. You know, we always do this. We always have cinnamon rolls on Family Day. You can't have chocolate croissants.
Alyssa's a big fan of that. She loves cinnamon rolls.
Yes.
What's that?
I said Alyssa loves cinnamon rolls, so she's amening to that ritual.
Well, you know, the older we've gotten, the more organic and natural and everything, but we keep our traditions rigorously.
Yeah.
We can't have family day without cinnamon rolls.
That's all.
I was going to ask, do you have your cinnamon roll recipe somewhere?
Well, actually, it's funny you should ask because I was just talking to a friend who's helping me with my launch party next week, and we are giving out my cinnamon roll recipe and also a quiche recipe that I've used for many years. Kind of as just if people come to the launch party that we have, we're giving out some of my recipes and so on. And I think that it's probably somewhere buried deep in my old blog. But I do give it out, and I'm going to give it out next week because I get so many letters about my cinnamon rolls.
I know, because as I was reading about in the book, I wanted so desperately to have it.
That is awesome.
Oh, I think I might even do a video of it someday because I've kind of made up my own bread recipe over the years. And
wow.
I thought, well, maybe I shouldn't share it because everybody's gluten-free now, but not everybody is, and it's fun to do once in a while.
So I know.
I'll do that sometime.
Yeah, okay.
That's amazing, and we definitely will be looking for that. That is that. I know that'll. Alyssa's really looking forward to that.
Jeff and I actually, whenever we travel, our thing is whenever a restaurant has a cinnamon roll, we order it to like find the best cinnamon roll. And so far,
you're after my husband's heart. He adores my cinnamon rolls. Well, actually, everybody does.
That is awesome. That is awesome. We can't wait to look for it.
I never knew I could make them. I was so proud of myself when I learned to make them.
Yeah, and it sounds like they're world famous. So we're going to be looking for that. I'm going to Google Sally Clarkson cinnamon roll recipe immediately after this podcast. But I think, yeah, maybe just one or two questions more. The one I had that I wanted to kind of end on I was thinking on, and then maybe Alyssa can ask one last one, is what would you say, just, you know, putting yourself either back in your shoes in your 20s, 30s, young parenthood, or just speaking to a 20-something-year-old, 30-something-year-old. I just know we have a lot maybe listening that either, again, are dating in high school and college and are going to get there soon, or are in that stage of just like kind of sinking in the sense of just they feel like all their time is diapers and spit up food, and they're kind of struggling to find intimacy with the Lord. Just what would you really kind of say to people that are in that young parenthood phase where it just feels like you're really getting stretched?
Well, I think that I was not a natural mom in that I remember calling my husband. I was visiting his mom once, and he was in California working 70 hours a week. And I said, I don't think I can do this. I don't know what I'm doing. And he helped me come up with a plan. But I think because we were so alone during all of the years of raising our children, we didn't have a lot of input or support systems. Clay and I decided that we wanted to write books and do conferences to help parents understand that their role really mattered, that God saw them, that they, we've all been exhausted. I always just wished, would someone, just somebody help me or call and say, I'll take your children for one afternoon. And so, it wasn't really often that happened. And so we wanted to write books and do conferences and do tapes that would really affirm parents with the reality of how lonely it is and how demanding it is in this day and time. But also, we wanted to give them inspiration and an understanding that when they get to heaven, Jesus will say, how did you whisper the secrets of the kingdom of God into this precious little one's life? Mm. And I will have to say that at this point, my kids are my best friends. I just am so grateful that somehow we made it through. We had times of depression, times of difficulty. We have a couple of clinically OCD kids, and we've had all sorts of medical issues and, different things. But I think it was keeping that vision of falling in love with my children and believing that building this home where I think when there's homes that are kind of maybe outposts for righteousness and goodness and love and fun and family and trust and sharing and feasts, when there's outposts all over the world where all that is sacred and good and beautiful matters and you're the builders of that, then the next generation will have hope. Because I think children only become healthy adults if their parents understand it's one of the most important works they'll ever get to do in their lifetime is to help build healthy homes and healthy children.
That's good. So it's almost like when you do feel like you're in the trenches, really kind of try to look up and keep the long vision, keep the big vision of what you're doing and what the kids' heart's about and eternity in mind.
I think so, but also we started a mom heart groups. So we try to write books that have Bible study and question and application in the back of each chapter, because we really feel like it's so important to find friends who have your values. If you go through a book together, you begin to shape your values in the same book, because I think that parents in their own home without support systems can become really discouraged. But if you have a friend who says, yeah, I haven't slept in 5 months either. you know, if they say, yeah, I did, I got angry today and I didn't mean to, and but I'm going to get better. If you have friends, two are better than one. And so we really encourage families to develop traditions, even with some friends. We have several families that we get together once a month for dinner every month for the last 10 years. And we've watched our children grow through things together. And it's just so important to put yourself, not to just feel guilty or bad for what you haven't done well, but to put yourself in the life of a friend or a family or someone who can really help you and inspire you. And the best way to do that sometimes is to have to create your own groups, whether at church or in your home, with people who have, you know, similar ideals that can affirm each other and help each other keep going.
That's good. I like that.
Is there a place to find those studies that you were talking about, Sally?
I'm sorry, could you say it just a little bit louder?
Is there a place to find those studies that you were mentioning, the Mom's Heart?
Well, we do have a Facebook group called Mom Heart Groups. And we have over 1,000 women that are involved in leading groups. And people will go there and say, do you have a group in North Carolina? Or in, is there any group in England or whatever? But also, we have written a handbook that we like to give out for free. That is really a discipleship kind of ministry handbook about how to start a group, how to open your home. And you can find that in our both on Amazon. I can't even think of the name of the book right now. I think it's One Mom Heart to Another. Or you can go to our ministry site, which is wholeheart.org. And we have those books there. They list the books in the Mom Heart Groups Facebook group. And we also have a blog just for moms called, it's at momheart.com. And we try to encourage women to start groups and to gather together, and they give their ideas and they share what they've been doing in their groups over the years.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. We just want to say a huge heartfelt thank you. This was a deep honor for us, just because it's not very often that you get to read books that give you life and really start to affect your vision for parenting, and then a month or two later get to talk to the author. So this is a real huge honor. And so we just wanted to say thank you for that, first of all. If anyone listening is a parent, make sure you get not just everything, like the cinnamon roll recipe, Mission of Motherhood, but get everything Sally's ever put out, but specifically the Life-Giving Home, Creating a Place of Belonging and Becoming, which you should be able to access and order right now if you are listening to this. It's amazing. Alyssa's loving it, and it's just been so impactful to us. Just real quick before we close, Sally, you mentioned some of your resources, but what would you like people to know in regards to keeping up with you? I know you said you had a podcast. If you want to let people know about that, I don't know if you want to give a shout out to your Twitter or website again, but what would be the main place if people say, okay, this stuff is awesome, I want to keep following?
Oh, that's thank you. And it has been such an honor to be with you. I'll have to tell you later on about how much my kids love what you do. But anyway, sallyclarkson.com is my blog, and I have lots of resources there and books. And I do my podcast At Home with Sally every Monday with a friend of mine that co-hosts it with me. So you can find my articles, my books, our conferences, and my podcast if you go to sallyclarkson.com. And I'm just so honored to be with you. I just love your hearts. I love what you do. And I just wish that I could really affirm and encourage all those sweet families and singles that are listening to you, because I love the heart that you are giving them for having really intentional relationships with each other and with the Lord and within their family. So thank you for having this podcast.
No, thank you. Yeah, like I said, we couldn't do it without people kind of going before us and really laying a track. And so we really appreciate that. So thank you guys for listening this week. We appreciate you guys. Make sure to hit us up on Twitter, hashtag Jeff and Alyssa, with anything about this conversation. I'll be hopping in that hashtag to talk and chat with you guys as well. And we just appreciate you guys so much. Talk to you later.